Welcome to Kinfolk Lore. We're excited to share our love for some of our favorite stories. This season, we're taking a short break from fantasy shows to share with you our love for another genre. I'm Andrea.
And I'm Paul, and our returning listeners will know that we're cousins who started the podcast because we love to talk about fantasy and sci-fi shows. In the past, we've covered His Dark Materials, The Witcher, Avatar, The Last Airbender, The Legend of Korra, and Lovecraft Country, and we've loved every moment of covering those shows. But we also love to talk about and learn from historical dramas, so we thought we'd bring those conversations to our audience also.
We've covered some of the biggest period pieces in historical dramas, including Bridgerton, The Gilded Age, and Downton Abbey. Woo! Last time, we talked about the final three seasons of Downton Abbey and a little bit about the movies, too. And this week, we'll be speaking about the Netflix historical drama, The Crown. We love these stories and, you know, how they reflect our culture back at us and make us consider history and highlight how people behave during major transition periods in Western history. There is no show that does this better than The Crown.
None.
Because we are covering a lot of ground, all of it basically, in this episode, there will be spoilers for all four seasons of The Crown.
Yes, and unlike certain princes, Kinfolk Lore will not abdicate its responsibility. We most certainly will have adult content. So, if you're here for all the royal tea about love triangles with spin-off plots and characters, you've come to the right place. You may need a chart, a Venn diagram, a timeline for some of these tangled relationships, but we've got you covered. We don't want you out here looking like Thatch playing Ibble Dibble.
That was such a terrible moment for her.
Oh, that was so awkward. I felt for her like it was wild. So season one and two of The Crown chronicle the marriage of Princess Elizabeth and the first 12 years of her reign as queen. We learn how Elizabeth, who never expected to be queen as a child, became the next in line to the throne when her uncle, King Edward VIII, abdicated the throne in 1936, making his younger brother George VI, aka Bertie, the king and changing a young Elizabeth's life forever. In the early seasons of the show, Elizabeth takes the throne just as post-war Britain is discovering its place in the New World. Churchill is the prime minister, and more countries are gaining independence from the empire. I'll keep my commentary to myself. I was about to say, thank goodness.
Good.
Yes. Meanwhile, two storms brew within the royal family. Princess Margaret makes an unsuitable match with a member of her father's household, and then has a whirlwind romance when that falls apart. While the show begins with Elizabeth's marriage to Philip, these two seasons focus on how difficult that relationship is for both of them.
Seasons 3 and 4 present us with a more mature monarch and country facing difficulties of a changing global economy. The royal family continues to struggle through these years, with Margaret's marriage disintegrating. Young Charles falls in love with yet another unsuitable candidate for marriage, and subsequently marries and separates from Diana Spencer. Seasons 3 and 4 explore the predicament of the royal family's traditional role. The institution and their way of life just don't really feel suited for the modern world anymore. And while wealthy and privileged, they live in a fishbowl, and nearly every member of the family suffers under those conditions. In these seasons, we also see the results of the country's diminished place on the world stage as their domestic problems grow. The IRA makes its first real appearance in the series with the assassination of Lord Mountbatten. In the nearly 30 years covered by the last two seasons of the show, not the last, but the two seasons that are available now, there is so much turmoil and loss inside and outside of Buckingham Palace.
Yeah, it's a trip. It really, really is a trip. And man, I was saying to you offline when we were talking about the season 3 and 4, whew, it's a cautionary tale, America, cautionary tale.
There are a lot of moments where it does just feel like, oh, wow, like this feels almost too similar. Like this is a world power losing some of that power and not coping with it very well.
No, so, at all. And then even like the scene when like when the Brits are coming to America and we're like kind of like talking shit about them, like, yeah, that's what a fading world power looks like when the guy's asleep on the bench. And I'm like, oh man, you know what? Like, too soon. Like, listen, like when I looking at that again, it's just too much. I mean, when you look at all of the things, we'll start here and then we'll talk about what we like. What you look at all the things that are happening, like overthrow of the government attempt, tragedies with children in schools, like all the different things that are happening. Thank God, as of this point that we know of, there haven't been any assassinations of anybody or anything like that. So thank goodness. But it's like all those things are like crazy when you like draw the parallels to what we've been living through in the last however many years. And it's just like, wow, like, listen, we need a trigger warning before seasons 3 and 4 of The Crown. And I don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, but it even starts before that. Like, if you think about the smog, which is from season 1, it's in a very early episode.
Yeah.
That is a result of overmining of coal. It is due to pollution. And the Conservative Party, the Tories, deny that. Yeah. They say it's weather. And, you know, having essentially watch major swaths of our country burn last year, it feels just like, okay, this is not history repeating itself. I want to be clear, there's obviously extremely different conditions in each country, but it does just feel like this is what happens when leadership abandons their post for problems that they think are more important than what will become, you know, apparent to them is actually quite important. So Churchill was like obsessed with all these other things and with the Soviets and all this, but like his own city, you couldn't see in front of your face.
Yeah.
And so I just think that parallel happens a lot. Like, look what's happening in our country right now.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's definitely, definitely interesting to see the connections to like some of the things. And you know, it's interesting because of the deep relationship that we have with this country, right? Like, we won our independence, you know, America won its independence from this country. And you know, we share a lot of, you know, connections in that way, and all, and you know, let's face it, you know, I do, the guy's name is King George VI. We know another King George that didn't have a good time with us. So the point is, we have a lot of history, and let's talk about the show and what we like about it based on, like, you know, obviously, like, and even going a little into our own history, like, you know, part of our family is in America. Part of our family, you and I, is in the UK. So we have even that history. We're like, we have family on both sides of the pond. So like, let's talk about what we like about the show based on our reflections and what we know about the history of the show and also just the show itself.
So this one is actually, for me, it's quite funny because a lot of people recommended the show to me in season 1.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched a single episode and was like, nah, this seems boring. And then about a year later, my mother, who grew up in England and lived through much of the first 2 seasons of this show, she would have been a teenage girl. Mm-hmm. She watched it and she was like, it's great. You need to go back and try it again. So I did. And I was totally hooked the second time. Mm-hmm. I think what I really like about the show is that it makes like the conditions of global issues and conflicts happening at the time and kind of brings them down to a micro level, and makes comparisons between like what's happening in people's personal lives and what's happening globally. But I also really like just how they've made the Crown itself a character.
Mm-hmm.
A character that is separate from Elizabeth. Mm-hmm. And I sometimes I find that deeply frustrating in her character development. And we are talking exclusively about like the events on the show. We're not going to talk at length about the actual queen or her actual family.
Yeah. 100%.
So when I say Elizabeth, I'm talking about the Queen Elizabeth Windsor on the show.
Yeah.
And I find that deeply frustrating that, like, the crown, the institution, the establishment, those are all characters that are separate from Elizabeth Windsor, who is a woman who is trying to navigate all of this. And I just sometimes I feel that the show lets her off the hook a little bit too much. But I like the construct of the institution as being its own like its own character.
Yeah, I do too. And you know, this is like new ground for us, right? Like, because we normally cover like fiction, straight fiction, fantasy, and even if it has some reference to historical times in history or like characters who were alive around the time, it's normally like just like a broad stroke. It's not like in the Gilded Age. It's not like, oh yeah, we have they're trying to detail portions of history and the characters of these people. A friend of ours, Anders from Bohemian Geeks Studies, like we've spoken about this, how he really sees like the crown starting to almost overtake Elizabeth over time, and how you can see the changes in her demeanor and moments in where she's speaking, where you're seeing things change on the show. Like, obviously we're talking about the show, we're not talking about the person, but like how it's changing who she is a little bit, and that character becoming almost more engulfing. What do you think about that? Do you see that happening as you go through the seasons? Because I kind of feel like that's happened a little bit, but I want to hear your take on it.
Oh no, I absolutely agree. I think that in season 3, we have not a totally different Elizabeth,
mm-hmm.
but an Elizabeth that is less family oriented and more service oriented.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a couple episodes in season 4. So when I first watched season 4, I think you and I discussed this. I was like, so in season 4, like, Elizabeth is the villain, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because there's multiple episodes where she is reflecting on the situation of her family and how her children are in crisis, how her sister is in crisis, and does absolutely nothing about any of it.
Mm.
And Philip sits right next to her and says, none of this is your fault. And I'm not saying that she should take responsibility for all of the failings of her children, but it's the ability of both her and Philip to kind of compartmentalize and just be like, oh yeah, everybody's in a bad situation, and let's take absolutely no action. Let's just keep telling them that they need to stay the course. It's like it's really tough. So I totally agree with Andrew. She at that point she's speaking as the institution, not yeah. as their mother, not as Margaret's sister.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm finding it really fascinating how that has developed, and look to see what's going to come of that later on. Let's start with where it starts though, in season 1, like without the abdication of the throne by Edward VIII, we're not talking about Elizabeth as the monarch. And let's, you know, in real life, like these are real people. You know, we just saw the celebration of the Platinum Jubilee. So we're looking at 75 years, right? Of like a person who's reigned from all the way back to when we see this event. And obviously, her dad ruled first. So let's talk about the abdication. You know, he wanted to marry Wallis Simpson, an American socialite who had been twice divorced and was actually still married when he proposed. The government and church both opposed this action. They basically were like, no, you can't do this. And he, rather than give up Wallis, chose to give up the crown. He said, listen, I'm tired of my family. I'm going to give up the crown. And this really shocked not only the world, but a lot of people in England, and definitely King George, right? Who at the time was not anticipating ever ruling, King George the sixth, right? He wasn't anticipating ever ruling. And the abdication becomes the backdrop for this entire first season. And Elizabeth was kind of a reluctant heir to the throne. She didn't want to be queen. And everything that she thought, you know, she thought she was going to have a pretty, like, normal, relaxed, kind of like, you know, I guess normal isn't the word, but she would have a normal life as opposed to the people in line for the, like, that closely in line to the throne. And that's all overthrown. What do you think? I mean, like, what do you think about how they covered this, about the emotion behind it, about the feelings behind it, about how the characters deal with it?
So, first, I just want to clarify something. The Platinum Jubilee is actually 70 years of service.
Oh, 70
75
years?
Is a Diamond Jubilee.
Excuse me. Yes. Well, 70 years. Leave it to me.
Only I would know these things.
No, I love it. I'm glad. No, it's fine. Thank you.
So I think that this is a event that was catastrophic to the individuals in this family in ways that can't be understated. Overstated, but like, I think in terms of how this turned out for England, mm-hmm. it's almost like a blip, right? Like, I don't think that, like, people born 30 years later when Elizabeth was queen were still thinking about the abdication. But it looms large for this family because they weren't expecting to ever have to serve. I mean, let's just take it down a second and look at Elizabeth's father. So, traditionally, princes married in this family, married other, like, royalty. So they would marry some foreign princess or, you know, one of their cousins. I mean, let's just face mm-hmm. it, this family likes to marry their cousins. They're not quite as bad as the Targaryens, but there's a lot of Targaryen energy.
Yeah,
there's a lot of like keeping, you know, the bloodline, you know, within certain families. And so, like, let's look at Albert, who was, you know, the Duke of York, right? He was the second in line. Mm-hmm. He married a regular person. Mm-hmm. Elizabeth Lyon Bowles was not a princess. She's a regular person. And he was allowed to do that in the sense because, I mean, she was still from a very rich family. When I say regular person, she wasn't like us. But she was... But like she wasn't royalty. She came from, you know, essentially the peerage. And so... I think that in itself tells you everything you need to know about the kind of life they expected to have. Yeah, mm-hmm. they still would have been extremely privileged. He would have had some duties as the prince, the Duke of York. He would have still been a member of the royal family. But I think otherwise he would have lived quite a normal life, the way that we later see Margaret lives a fairly normal life. Like, she goes to parties, she drives herself around, like, she gets to live, right? She doesn't have to meet with the prime minister every week. Mm-hmm. And so I think that even though the abdication sometimes, like, in history gets a footnote, for these people, it was, and the show does a great job of showing this, like, how much it changed just everything for them.
Yeah, and I think it changed... You know, they later reveal, and we'll get into that in season two, that it really was a big event for the world, too, because, you know, well, like, if you think about it, let's get into it. The Marburg Files and that episode, like, it kind of shows that, like, he was colluding with the Nazis, right? Like, he was, like, by the show's account and by a lot of historical documents, he was, you know, going to be the king of England, who was also, like, really, like, you know, in bed with the Nazis. And that is one of the things that would have been difficult in the relationship with the prime minister and him, and definitely with Churchill at that time, like, who was, you know, like,
well,
like
there wouldn't have been there wouldn't have been a prime minister anymore, because yeah. the Nazis would have taken over the island and basically installed him as king. And so yeah. you're now part of the German Empire, you know, like,
yeah, when yes. I watched that, I thought it was, like, when you think about fantasy and sci-fi, you think about things like Game of Thrones, you think about the prince who leaves, like, you know, the throne and then comes and wants, goes with, like, the opposite side and attempts to overthrow his brother to regain the throne. That would sound like, oh, yeah, you're talking about something that, like, you know, a fantasy author wrote. But this is, like, real life. Like, this actually happened. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, I think for me, that episode with the Marburg Files was stunning, because I knew sort of about all of the connections with the Nazis, but this had new details that mm-hmm. I hadn't experienced, like I hadn't known before. And I, what I like about how the show does it is for people who don't know any of this, you're experiencing it with Elizabeth.
Mm-hmm.
And they do a great job of building up this character as already kind of a villain, but like a sympathetic villain. Mm-hmm. You know, like I think we can all understand how unfair it was that he couldn't just marry the woman that he loved. Like, he just wanted to marry Wallace Simpson. It's not like he wanted to, like, do something crazy. Like, he just wanted to marry this woman.
He's held up by a lot of American writers. Like, thinking of one, like, Think and Grow Rich, one of the books that I've read a bunch of times, is, like, the author of the book is holding this up, holds him and Wallace Simpson up as an example of, like, letting go of power and not letting your ego be greater than love and love being stronger than, and it's like, when you see this other context, you're like, wow, okay, we only got part of the story, huh? Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's really interesting to see that.
Yeah, I mean, I think we can all understand his point of view, mm-hmm. whether we agree with him or not, but, like, I think we can all understand his point of view.
Mm-hmm.
The show still introduces him as sort of a villain. He's quite unkind mm-hmm. to Elizabeth. He's very dismissive of his brother in a lot of ways. And so I think we may mostly just see him as an annoyance up to this point. Mm-hmm. Then it's like, not only did he collude with the Nazis so that he could get his own position back, but he encouraged them to continue bombing his subjects, mm-hmm. his would-be subjects. That is grotesque. Like, there's no other way to describe that.
Unreal.
Yeah. And so I think that this episode is particularly good because it's also the same episode where, like, forgiveness and Billy Graham and Elizabeth's lifelong relationship with Billy Graham, which I also didn't know about,
mm-hmm.
Really come into focus. And but here, I feel like she's still Elizabeth. You know, she's still his niece. She's still angry at him on behalf of the, like, herself and her family. She's embarrassed by this turn of events, but she's not quite one with the crown yet. And so I think that this, his whole character and the way that he's kind of like a specter over her reign is really well done on the show.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. And I think that that's, like, you know, like she even says, like when she's saying, I want to, you know, forgive him, she even says, I've read the Marbrook files and, you know, she's told, like, no, you need to hear the whole story. Right. Like, and that's not everything. That's the stuff that was fit for everyone to see. So, like, she's still gaining her bearings about what's really going on in her kingdom, what's happening. It's interesting to me also that, like you said, her being still Elizabeth, I think from that vantage point, she's only been hearing the stories about what it did, you know, like, I think a lot of them, they felt about, well, what it did to her father, what it did to her father's mm-hmm. health. Her mother really held for her whole life, apparently, in the story they talk about it, that her father's health really failed more because he had the pressure of this on him. And anyone who's seen the King's Speech, you'll see a little bit more in depth about, like, maybe what this felt like for him than even this show. But I kind of referenced some of these shows together. And it's just interesting to me, like, listening to that, that, like, she probably wasn't thinking about it from the standpoint of, like, how did his abdication affect England? I think she was more thinking about it, like you're saying, how did it affect her immediate family, her mom, her sister, herself, her, you know, the line of succession. I think that's what more her children that were to come. I think that's really where she's sitting in that moment, you know?
So. Yeah, I agree. And I think it's actually kind of tough for me to talk about the show sometimes and to think about it, because I do think the show is very sympathetic to the crown.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's hard a lot of the time, but I also think sometimes that's necessary, because I think that people hold the crown up to this standard, and also we hold, forget the crown, we hold politicians in this country
mm-hmm.
up to a standard that we could never live up to ourselves.
Yeah.
So we still don't really elect you know, like, was Donald Trump our first divorced president? Like, we still look at people mm-hmm. as being moral leaders when that's not the job.
No,
and so I feel that it's, even though I think the show is quite kind on why Elizabeth made certain decisions, especially when it comes to Margaret, especially, I have a hard time reconciling the person and the decisions that she makes as a person and the institution. And I think that with the former king, this is especially difficult because he's essentially made to be a villain on the show, but he was also treated terribly by the establishment.
Yeah. No, 100.
And those two things can be true, but I just feel like the way that the show portrays him and also portrays Wallace Simpson, it feels very much like they're one step from being like mustache twirling villains. And it's more complicated than that.
Yeah, I just want
to
go on.
The Nazi connection is trash, no doubt. That's but like just the way that all of this led up to, like, it very much feels like Elizabeth and her father were victimized. And I'm just not sure. I feel like that's very complicated. It's more complicated than that. Should he have given up the love of his life so that his brother wouldn't have to step up? I don't know. That's a big ask.
I mean, I feel like, but the other piece of it that, I mean, that isn't in the show, but like I've read a little bit about too, there also was a lot of discussion about whether or not he was manipulated, right? Like whether or not she ended up being the love of his life, but she had very close relationships to some higher ups that were like dating relationships in the Nazi regime that then ended up, you know, her falling in love with this guy. Who knows if this was like an authentic relationship? I mean, we know espionage and spies and all that. At that time when people were very much trying to expand like empires, like, who knows whether this was, like, a legitimate thing or whether he was manipulated. We'll never know. Like, I mean, us personally, you and me on this thing, I don't know. You know what I mean? Maybe never is a strong term, but there's a lot of things that we just can't know. Like, why?
I mean,
like,
that is mentioned in the show, but, like, I want to be very clear that this was the 1930s and Wallace Simpson was a married, once previously divorced, about to be divorced again, woman from America. And I think that as we can see with how the media treats Meghan Markle, and we also hear this, like, is Harry being manipulated away from his family? I just want to be careful with that stuff. Like, we don't, like,
yeah,
that's a lot of that. Those narratives are just purely from sexism. Like, there's no other, she wasn't the pure, perfect woman that people wanted him to marry, so it's just sexism.
Yeah, no, I feel you on that, but I also feel like two things can be true, right? Like there can be the sexist narrative, which is what you're highlighting, and then it can also be like governments playing power games and spies and all these, like, two things can be true, and I can't ever answer the second one. We can't answer the first one. There were definitely sexist tropes that were like in that time period, and just like in general, the institution, the fact that they were like, oh yeah, you're divorced, so now you can't get married to this person. Oh, that's lame. Like, I agree with that 110%, you know? And by the way, there are only, I want to go on record, not that this is a big deal, but there are only two divorced presidents in the history of America. It would be Ronald Reagan and Donald Trump. So take that with your family values. Sorry.
I forgot about Reagan.
Ronald Reagan and Donald Trump. That's it. And so, speaking of American presidents, what about the Kennedy visit?
So, the Kennedy visit is a complicated episode because it's mostly like made up. but I actually really like what they do with the episode, because the Kennedys were known as American royalty, right? Mm-hmm. To this day, I think the Kennedy family still gets treated almost as if they were a royal family, and mm-hmm. for better or for worse, right? That's not all good. And in their case, many times just highlights the tragedy that exists in that family.
Yeah.
But I do think that this episode did a few things at once that I really loved, which was it gave Elizabeth a mirror to look in that she didn't quite love. So she's used to being the most famous and beloved and photographed woman in the world. Here comes Jacqueline Kennedy, and she is charming and brilliant. And remember, Elizabeth had a very like simple education. She's mostly almost her entire education is based on the Constitution. She is not like a person who has a lot of interest outside of her role in her family. Jacqueline Kennedy was a very highly educated and cultured and charming woman for the time, right? Like, I mean, for the time, she probably could have continued her education, but it would have been difficult to do in the 50s. So I think that this was kind of like, here's another queen for you to look at and find yourself wanting, which is like a very relatable feeling for women, that comparison that, you know, people are making. And what I also liked about it was that it looked at both couples. We already knew that Philip and Elizabeth were having problems. It then showed that also the Kennedys didn't have a perfect relationship, and for similar problems, similar reasons. So Jack was upset that his wife stole the show, upstaged him in France. And Philip's whole life is about like not having enough to do, feeling useless, feeling sidelined, feeling like he was going to be more of a king than sit next to the queen. And so I just thought it was a fascinating way to do this. And then in the end, when Elizabeth becomes almost more courageous because she wants to outshine Jackie and also wants to flex her power. In my opinion, this was her feeling like, okay, well, Jackie Kennedy might be all these things. She might be beautiful. She might be thin. She might be glamorous. She might be charming, but I'm the queen of England. So let me go to a Commonwealth country and remind them what it means to be the queen of England. So I love this episode. I think it's actually one of their best. It's just like, again, in the personal and the political are all mixed in here. Yeah. She never goes to, you know, dance with Kwame Nkrumah if she doesn't have this experience with Jackie Kennedy.
Yeah. And that's it's very interesting, because that's like, speaking of Kwame Nkrumah, like that's one of the reference points for a season three plot, which is the coup attempt, when Mountbatten, he actually references a coup that involved Kwame Nkrumah, right? Like as a recent coup, and he starts talking about all the coups of society, and he goes into all of those things. I mean, goodness, this, as you said when we were offline, this is probably the most polite attempt to overthrow a government.
I would like more biscuits with my tea. So back to the discussion about overthrowing the government.
Yeah. And he's laying it out with a PowerPoint presentation and the whole thing. Well, you know, this thing, and then Julius Caesar, but we might not want to go the way of Julius Caesar, and everybody chuckles. And it's like this whole freaking thing. But he arrives at a very key point. It's very like the institutions themselves, the way they have been set up, the things that are, well, the amount of work you would have to do, it be, in his estimation, variably impossible to overthrow the government. And this is why Tywin Lannister, I mean, Lord Mountbatten, I mean, this is why Charles Dance is the man. He does his presentation, his acting was amazing. But what do you think of like this whole plot, this whole thought like process, and what it does in the story with Mountbatten and the family?
I actually didn't believe this to be true when I saw this episode. This was one of the, you know how when you're watching these shows, like you come across an episode and you're like, Google.
Yes. Please, all the time.
Please confirm. Please confirm.
Oh, man. This I drive people crazy with that.
This one felt so bizarre to me and so I just couldn't believe it. And it's such a quiet episode otherwise. Like, mm-hmm. the queen is literally off with her, you know, her friend, Porgy.
Friend in quotes.
Right. They're looking at horses and, like, trying to figure out how other breeders and racers, like, raise their horses. And she gets this call from the prime minister, who she actually also can't believe it. She's like, wait, what? I'm sorry, did you say Dickie was trying to overthrow the government?
Dickie, come on, the guy, he raps great.
it is such a bizarre plot line that I loved it so much, especially I feel like Charles Dance was entirely casted for this plot line.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like they were like, okay, we have a coup coming up with Lord Mountbatten. We're going to just go ahead and make that time.
Who else do you pick? Even the pictures. You're like, yeah, that is like the real life freaking embodiment of Tywin. He like literally like I feel like sometimes when freaking Lord Mountbatten and Charles are talking and he's giving him counsel, I feel like the time where Tywin is walking Tommen out after his brother died. He's like, and what would make a good king? And that's right. I'm like, holy shit, this is the same thing. What's happening? Oh, that's great. Anyway, well done.
Yeah,
well
I done. Just, I could not believe that this was like a real thing that happened. And then that also that there were no real consequences for it. It's like the queen was like, don't do it again. And that was pretty much it.
But I think ultimately he entertained them, but here's my question for you. Do you think he really entertained let's overthrow the government?
Yes, 100%.
You think so? Okay. All right.
Reason is this is so in the scene where the queen discovers it, because at first I'm like, he's just playing games with them, right?
That's what
and
I thought.
And then when the scene where the queen is learning about it, she's having dinner with Porgy and the aide comes in, I think it's one of her secretaries, and says, Lord Mountbatten is on the phone. And she's like, tell Dickie I'll call him back. And then he comes back later and is like, you know, ma'am. And she's like, tell Dickie I'll call him back. I'm in the middle of dinner. And he's like, actually, it's the prime minister. So Dickie had been trying to reach her all day.
Mm.
And I think he was trying to get her so that he could be like, hey, here's what's happening. We can't let this happen to our country anymore. Or at least, at the very least, can I see you as soon as you return to town? And the prime minister just happened to get there first because, you know, again, she's not interested in taking phone calls from her family. She's interested in taking phone calls that actually require her attention. Yeah. On behalf of the crown. And so that's why the prime minister reaches her first. So yeah, I absolutely think that he was going to do this.
Jesus. Oh man, I was holding out a little tiny shred of hope, but you're right. I get it. I get it. No, man, it's a very fascinating plot line. It's a very, very fascinating plot line. Let's talk about the relationships. I think like this is a good place to kind of think about. I want to start with Margaret because she has multiple relationships over three seasons, right? She has, you know, Captain Peter Townsend. She has Anthony Armstrong Jones, right? And then obviously in the third season, you know, Roddy Llewellyn, right? So by the way, you know, there's this obviously actor changes in season three, but it still keeps the same kind of energy. What were your thoughts about the way they portrayed Margaret, her life, her proximity to, like, you know, her sister and not being the queen, but having this life that she was leading and how tortured it seems like a lot of her relationships were?
Margaret is such a difficult figure. So Margaret was extremely much beloved by the English people. And so I think that the show has done some things to her reputation that a lot of people don't appreciate. Because I find character Margaret, and mind you, I know nothing about actual Princess Margaret aside from what you can read in her Wikipedia page. So I want to be perfectly clear again. This is, we're just talking about the character. I find character Margaret to be so devastatingly sad of a character that there are so many scenes that are, I don't even know if they're meant to be sad scenes, where I found myself tearing up. One in particular is this scene where she is with Anthony Armstrong Jones and Anthony, sorry, Armstrong Jones. And it's like right before he's, it's either right after he proposes or right before. And you're, as a viewer, you're just watching her, the desperation take over, because he doesn't love her. That's clear. I think she does love him, but would she have fallen in love with him if she wasn't so vulnerable? If she had not, if she had just felt heard and valued by somebody else, would she have ended up in a situation which was doomed from the very beginning? And I do actually think that Vanessa Kirby plays a very different Margaret from the Margaret that Helena Bonham Carter plays. Which I think is entirely appropriate.
Yeah, agreed. It's a progression, though, like in a way that you can still, even though the changes in characters, even from the queen, to you can feel the progression as to where they are in life. You know what I mean? Is more accurate. So, yeah, I agree. Helena Bonham Carter did a good job. I was kind of out in the beginning. I didn't want to see her play Margaret at first. I was like, eh. But she did great. I thought she did great.
Well, the casting is a little bizarre, right? Because Margaret's a younger sister. Helena Bonham Carter is 10 years older almost than Olivia Colman. So the casting doesn't feel great, but she does a wonderful job. I mean, by the end, I actually am now feeling again as we go into season five, which will be out in November. Again, like, how am I going to get used to new casting?
Yeah.
Because at this point, Helena Bonham Carter is Princess Margaret to me.
Yeah.
But I just think that her story is so devastating. I do think that there are points where there's a lot of parallels between her and Charles. And I find it difficult to gain any real sympathy for either of them at some points, because I also think there is a little bit of entitlement and also resignation that I find frustrating from both characters. But she's just like the, in my opinion, she is the most tragic character of this entire series.
Definitely, there's a lot about her that feels tragic, and definitely connected to the same kind of things that we see with Charles. We spoke about that offline, and I think it's connected a lot to what Philip kind of talks about a little bit too. Like that, I love that scene where he's talking about the two tracks of the House of Windsor, right?
The boring, like, versus the individualistic. Yeah, it nails it, right?
Totally.
That Elizabeth and her father are better suited for the crown because their personalities are easier to subdue. They can actually take themselves out of what they want and what they need personally and put that aside for the sake of this, like, sort of ridiculous role that they have to play. There's just no way her uncle or her sister, or it turns out her son, can do that. They're just, it's not in their nature. They need to be free. They need to be individuals. And I think that that's a hard one for me to answer, which is better. But I definitely feel that it is a public servant. You do need to have the capacity to put aside your personality often, but also, like, no one would ever elect her to be the head, our head of state, because personality matters a lot. So
I
don't know. It's a tough place for her to be. And poor Margaret, who was, you know, I think at some point in the show, Elizabeth says, my sister, when she's talking to Jackie Kennedy, my sister was a born queen. And it's true. But I also think that Margaret, and in part probably due to some of her mental health challenges, never really like embodied the role of Princess Royale, or of like she could have done things to make her life like a little bit less empty and miserable, and from the show she just never did.
Yeah, it's like in the show, it's like a sense of like, you know, I wouldn't say it's like a sense of entitlement, but it's also like a sense of this jealousy, this resentment, there's ego. It's like a lot of ego. I find that with Charles too. I find like Charles was very much, you know, it's like, you know, a feeling of like, well, this is my place and I'm entitled to this, and this is the way it's supposed to work for me. Another person who I think struggles with that a little bit is Philip. And I think Philip and Elizabeth's relationship evolves over time, right, through this, right? Like, he even speaks about this when he's speaking to Diana, and he, you know, is kind of trying to like kind of speaks to her a little bit about like, you know, the role of like, he loves Diana, but he's kind of like, hey, you know, like, she's the queen, you know what I mean, like, this is gonna be a thing, right? Like, you gotta kind of, because Diana struggles with that a little bit, right? So I think and the roles in the family, I kind of feel like Philip struggled very much with his role in the family, like from season one. And you find that really clearly in the moon landing episode. I think like this place of like, and what Elizabeth has to do to kind of, you know, get him to feel like connected to like where he is in life and what's going on, and him to do the work. I think like you see a lot of the struggles that he's having play over the past two seasons play out very much so in that episode.
Yeah, he feels unaccomplished. Like, he mm-hmm. hasn't... He's basically having a midlife crisis, right?
Yeah, yep.
And he feels that he had planned a very different life for himself, and it got completely sidetracked by... It got eaten by the crown, basically. Like, mm-hmm. all of his ambitions fell away. Elizabeth is the job, which is what his father-in-law told him. She is the job. And I can understand how anybody would feel demoralized by that.
Yeah.
I have a little bit of a retort for him, which is like, you could have spent more time raising your kids,
mm-hmm.
but mm-hmm. if you were feeling bored, maybe spend a little bit more time with the future king.
100%.
But yeah, I think that like, I think one of the things this show does really well is the exploration of these characters on an individual level, but also showing how that's in conflict with the roles that they play in this family and in the institution. And yeah. It's done, in my opinion, the best job with Philip. Philip is a character we have the most insight into. And even though he's very clearly like a villain in seasons one and two, there is that point at the end of season two where she and him come to an understanding. And then that understanding kind of just continues through the season three and four, and in my opinion is solidified when he has that conversation that you just referenced with Diana.
He's
basically saying to Diana, like, Charles is the job, mm-hmm. all this other stuff that you are worried about is unimportant, the job is Charles. And I can also understand that that was an easier pill to swallow in the 1950s than it was in the 1980s, because if I were Diana, I would have been like, oh well.
Yeah, no, it's true.
No, like, my life is not going to be totally given over to the whims of this grown man. He's not the job. My children are the job. My own, like, self taking care of me is the job. And so I think that that moon landing episode is, like, a real midpoint for Philip, because he's feeling kind of unmoored and, like, he doesn't know what to do. But
and they've already tackled this idea that, you know, around the romantic part of their relationship with like this partnership of like, you know, there's like, yeah, you can be aligned with what you're talking about, like Elizabeth being the job, but maybe there's something missing in those other aspects. And they've tackled that in season two, you know, and now in season three, we're kind of like on the other side of all of those ups and downs of like the young love and all the things that they were going through. And he's still kind of, he's still looking for to have his feet solidly on the ground in his own life of what, like you said, he's looking back, man, did I waste my life? Am I like, I don't feel as accomplished. I don't feel like I did enough, you know? And I think some of that is, I don't know, man. I think like a lot of them, I feel like, I wouldn't say a lot of the royals feel that way because I don't know them, right? And we just only know what we read. But I would have to think that the institution takes a lot of that away from you. Like when you're like, you're tasked to do these things, like, and this is what you're tasked to do. You may do some other things here and there, but they're not really your main job. And so in some ways, that duty also limits you.
Well, I think that I'm actually really interested to see what happens in season five, because what I think you can see is that the modern generation is regularly setting aside being members of the royal family to pursue their own dreams.
Yeah.
And so we keep talking about the actual people rather than what's on the show, but I'm curious to see how the show deals with Sarah Ferguson, aka Fergie, who was also sort of a free spirit who the press absolutely crushed.
Yeah.
And has had so many conflicts with the royal family and I think is finally kind of settled in. But both of her children are princesses, but they're not working royals.
Mm-hmm.
Princess Anne's children are not working royals. I mean, I think I would love to just see how the show deals with the massive number of the Queen's grandchildren who just say no, I don't want any part of this. Don't include me in this. I'm going to go pursue something else.
Yeah, I'm going to be, I mean, or if they take it up to that point, like, do they get up to that point is the question, right? Like, because we don't know how far is this is not the last season coming up, is it?
No, so during all of the Harry, Meghan, you know, Megxit, there was an announcement that season five would be the final season. And I think I speculate about why that happened. The timing seemed really.
Then they saw the iffy Oprah interview and they were like, well, might be able to squeeze out one more season. You know? Like,
so, but what they have said about season five, it is that what they've said about season six, rather, not season five, is that they just didn't think that they could do the story that they're going to present in season five justice in one season. So it's very possible that they're going to really drag out the 90s and the early aughts. I hope that's not the case. I would like to get to at least Kate Middleton.
Yeah.
You know, I'd really like to get to at least like the Cambridges marriage. I'm okay if they stop there. I certainly do not need the Crown's take on Meghan Markle. I'm really good on that.
No.
But I would love to see it end. First of all, there's like so many plot lines that we know how they not end because these folks are still alive. Like no one's story is over. Mm-hmm. But like, for instance, I think we need to at least see the reconciliation of Charles and Camilla.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, I don't think they can leave that hanging. So I think at the very least, if we don't get to the grandchildren and their adulthood, I think at the very least we need to get to, you know, how did Camilla become the Duchess of Cornwall? But I would just love to see them handle the Diana stuff with a little bit more compassion and grace in season five. But I don't want it to drag out either. We know these two people are going to get divorced. Please do not make me sit through all of the horribleness of the divorce.
Yeah. And we already seen like, you know, Spencer, like that movie already exists. Right. So like, even though it's kind of wild.
I actually had a question for you, and I had a hard time tracking this down on the internet. You know how season four ends at this holiday party? I can't tell if it's Sangraham or Balmoral. I think it's probably Sangraham.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the same party that is Spencer is about? It is, right? Like the same.
I think so. I feel like yes. And I feel like that's going to be interesting to see how they cover that or if they even go into that. because very closely, I think that is because after that weekend, right, where they're there, this is the place where the queen tells Charles off, which we all love because it was really real. It was like, you and your wife are freaking being immature. Like, just what are you doing? Like, you know what I mean? Like, nobody feels sorry for you. And I think she, like, she's the proxy for the audience by that point. Cause I think at that point in the show, I'm just fed up with the whole drama. Like, I'm
I think at that point in the show, I'm mad at them both.
Yeah.
Like, it's really hard. Diana is a very sympathetic character, but largely in part because she's very young.
Yeah.
And she didn't know what she was signing up for necessarily. But then you also just have these moments of frustration with her. And at that point, I was just finished with both of them.
I guess it might not be, though, too, because I'm trying to remember from season four. Are the kids born yet? Are William and...
Yeah.
And
yeah.
They are. Okay. Yeah. So it could very well be that party. So if the kids are born, then it could very well be that party. And I think that... Yeah, I could see that being the case because closely after that they get divorced, right? So like that's
I think they separate
at
first, yeah. And then I should know the timeline a little bit better because my mother is still an unapologetic Diana stan, but also if anyone wants to hear more about Princess Di, You're Wrong About did a whole series on her. And I felt like I learned so much I didn't know. And it actually, I listened to it around the same time as I watched these seasons. But I just, the timeline never quite stuck with me. So I'm not 100% sure on this. But I hope they don't drag out the divorce too much because it is cruel and messy. And it's actually cringeworthy to watch some of these Diana Charles episodes.
Yeah. No, we all live. I mean, if you grew up in the time period we grew up in, we all lived through it by watching the tabloids, right? Like, we saw a lot of it. I remember the day when, after the divorce, right? But I remember the day when Princess Diana, passed away and all of that. And that was like, it played out very publicly. You know what I mean? So the divorce was pretty messy. We'll see what they do with that. We'll see if maybe what they get to with some of the other events. Like, obviously, will Tony Blair be in there? Will all that happen? What's going to happen with Princess Margaret? Are they going to talk about her health issues? Are they going to talk about, like, will we get up to the point where she passes away? There's a lot of things still left to cover, right? Like, for them.
Yeah. And what is the queen's life look like?
Yeah.
For the last 20 years, right? Both Princess Margaret and the Queen Mother, who are in season four basically her bedrock. Every time there's a family problem, you in season four you see the Queen Mother, Margaret, and Anne gather with the queen and talk it through with her, and this is usually before she speaks to Philip about it. And so what will her personal life be like? What will things be like for her when she no longer has that support and is also, becoming older herself? Like, she'd be in her 70s in the early aughts. So I think there's a lot of meat on this bone that they could pick, but I'm not looking forward to a lot of it because it's going to be hard to watch. Like, who wants to see this show do Princess Diana's death? I hope that I don't actually want to see it. But I
don't either. I hope they do that.
I hope they do it with a lot of sensitivity and compassion. Agreed. To her. Because I feel like sometimes in that conversation, we're no longer speaking about her as a person. She becomes just spectacle.
Agreed. And I think on top of how you would normally handle it, the thing that adds more sensitivity to the way that they handle this is that the way in which she died were people chasing her as paparazzi, adding to that idea of covering people as a spectacle, covering people as like, as if they're almost not even human. So I think like that is, they, it would behoove them. They've done everything so well, I think, up to this point. There's a lot of things about this that have just been like, okay, this is like Netflix premier prestige show, in my opinion, without question. And I just hope that they handle this with a lot of care and sensitivity to the family, to like her memory, and to the people who cared about her, like care about her and cared about her. You know what I mean? So
yeah. And I also, another thing that I think would be interesting is, can we get the Spencers back in the fold? They kind of disappear once Diana marries Charles, and they're, if the show is going to depict the death of their sister, then I would like to see them actually cast her siblings who were very involved in all of the fallout of that. So I guess I'm looking forward to season five, but I'm, at the same time, I'm not really looking forward to it, because I know, I actually, this is a, the part of the story that I'm most familiar with because I lived through it, right? And I know that it, there's going to be a lot of tragedy ahead and a lot of difficult storylines that we're all really familiar with. And I truly hope that the show can treat Diana's death with real compassion, because these are all real people, and not just the royal family, like all the people who are affected by the behavior of England in this time period. So it's hard to see this as entertainment, but it's also hard to look away, because the whole reason that we're doing this season, and the whole reason that you and I like to talk about these stories, is because they reflect our history back at us, and why and they put into context why things have played out the way that they have and how people behave. And so I don't want to look away from season five, but I also don't want to think of it as entirely entertainment, because I know what is coming. And like, the spectacle that was the royal family in the 90s and early aughts is just feels so connected to me to the spectacle of all these other celebrities who've been treated terribly by the media and by us. You know, like I can make a direct connection from Princess Di to Britney Spears, like just this, the way that they are objectified and treated as is not human, but something else. It's just like, it's extremely difficult. So I actually trust the show to bring a lot of nuance to this. But I wasn't impressed with how they depicted Diana's relationship with the press in season four. So let's hope that they've had some time to think about it, and they'll get it really right in season five.
Yeah, it's hard, right? It's like having enough awareness and perspective in your consciousness, like when you're thinking about it, to also put a mirror up to yourself as the creators of the show. Because honestly, right, like their covering of this whole family and what's happened as a historical drama is like they're members of the media, the very same media. Yes, we can say that the paparazzi is a more sensationalized version, but as the reason why we can connect that draw that line from Princess died to Britney Spears is like that was like the moment where media was really like fast paced video. Everything was super portable. You can like do before we even had smartphones, you could just like come, but you still had camcorders and digital tape and all. It was like speeding up the delivery of information. The internet was like catching on. It was just speeding up the, how quickly you could get information. And that really is a turning point, an inflection point in that whole thing. And so as people who are making this story about people who have kind of like lived in a fishbowl their entire life, you know, whether through choice or whatever it is, or birth, it's kind of interesting because they're gonna have to hold the mirror up to themselves as members of the media. You know what I mean? As we do too. Look at us, we're covering this show. Like we all have to think, oh, we're covering real people's lives. And this is like, this is a watershed moment for us, I really feel like, because you and I have had those conversations of like, we're going to stay away from covering things in that are real life unless we're going to get into journalism. So this is like on that borderline, right? And I think like this has been, it's good. I've enjoyed it. I love this show. We talk about this show offline all the time. But I think it's like an interesting thing to talk about people's real lives in the media, you know?
Totally. So. And I think it's important to get these stories down, right? And to document history, not just for people who are privileged or politicians or whatever, or in, or places in leadership, but like also for the people who, you know, will never actually know all of their names. Like, I think the best episode of this show, in my opinion, hands down, is the Aberfan episode.
Yeah.
Which is an event that I knew nothing about and is still an event affecting, that will just like always affect that region. They'll always remember it. And it was a great loss. And I think it's important to capture, to remind people of those things that happened. We shouldn't forget the lives lost or the pain and suffering that people endured. But it, you know, there is this point where it's like, is this entertainment or like, you know, like,
yeah,
I guess
yeah,
it is at the end of the day, it is entertainment. And if entertainment helps us engage with the story, then great. So that's where I'm kind of at.
I think it also helps us. Sorry, go ahead. What were you saying?
No. I was just going to say that's where I'm kind of at with season 5 of the show. Like, at what point are we participating in the very thing that is the villain of, that's going to be the villain of season 5, which is going to be the press, you know, the media. So that's how I'm feeling, conflicted about it, but I'm still going to watch it. Like, I still would like to see how they pull this off.
Yeah, no, it's real. I share a lot of those sentiments. And I think like one of the things that I find interesting about the Aberfan situation was when I learned about it. I didn't know about the fog either, but the Aberfan I definitely didn't know about. I knew something was going to happen when I was watching the show. But I also think like it's interesting to see how elites, the power structure, these show up to these events of, you know, as they say in Game of Thrones, the small folk like us, right? Like how do they show up to those events? The people who are in these power, you know, regular everyday people. And I think like, you know, it's been rumored and the Crown has never officially said that this is the case, but many times it's been said that like this is one of the Queen's biggest regrets, how she showed, how long it took her to go to Aberfan. She's gone more than any member of the royal family to that site. And I think that the person who was responsible for the mining and all that over there, he like was accepting a freaking award while it happened and didn't go until a day or two after. Like, he also showed up late there, right? To everyday people. So seeing like, you know, documenting these things help us to learn from them, in my opinion, about, you know, if ever we're in positions of leadership or in proximity to leaders or just the everyday heroes, you know, the people who like still like at the after effects of that event, from what I read, were that there were a lot of parents who felt, who had survivor's guilt. Like, I lived and my kid didn't. Kids that didn't go to school that day, they were like, oh my gosh, my friend died, but I'm alive. Like, why? You know, like, people are still thinking about that to this day. Generations will still reference that time, that what happened. So it's I agree, it's important to document these things so we can learn from them and learn, and, you know, I read a lot of memoirs and things like that to kind of learn from the way people made decisions, to understand like what their thought process was and why they made those decisions, you know. So I do appreciate that part of it, but I also have some caution going to season 5 about the paparazzi piece for sure, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The other thing, we'd be remiss, I guess, kind of talk about this because this will play into season 5. We'd be remiss if we did not talk about one of the keys, like, relationships, right? All of these things. We touched a little bit on Diana and Charles getting divorced. But let's talk about, like, this kind of weird entangled kind of situation that's going on in the relationships where you got Anne, you got, you know, Camilla. How are they going to deal with each other based on the fact that they've both dated the same person, right, in this coming season? So you have like this whole thing, right? They like kind of played out where Charles was not really dating Camilla, but Camilla was dating Anne's boyfriend, and then Anne like let him, like broke up with him, and then it's like a whole mess. That relationship, how do you think that plays out in season 5?
I don't think it does.
You think it's let go?
Yeah, because Anne, so in season 4, Anne is like, it was a bit of fun. She was not trying to be with Andrew Parker Bowles. Like, she was not interested. I don't think it plays out. Like, in season 4, Anne is like extremely sympathetic to Charles and Camilla, but also understanding that that her and Andrew are still friends, by the way.
Yeah,
that she speaks to Andrew, and Andrew loves Camilla, and they want their marriage is mostly working.
Yeah.
And so I don't think we'll see much more of those, that foursome intertwined.
Did anybody like think that his initials are APB? Like somebody put out an APB? Like nobody thought about that? Like it's like, hey, APB, what's up? Oh man, yeah, no. One of my favorite scenes of that whole thing is season was Anne like singing Starman and like cruising down the street on her way to like drop some of these bombs. It was actually pretty good.
That scene is hysterical.
Yeah, it's great.
That scene is hysterical. Her parents are appalled.
Yeah.
And she's like, it was a bit of fun. Sorry, mummy.
Oh, it's so good.
It's so funny. But imagine being summoned by two generations of your elders and asked, like, what is going on in your personal life, but also in the personal life of your sibling. What an awkward situation for Anne, and she handled it with such grace.
No, she really did. I mean, and I just think like, you know, at the core of it, generations, like we've seen now since season one with the abdication and like the whole thing with the king not being able to marry who he wanted to. And then like you see now like this kind of innuendo about like, oh, Camilla and Charles and I've read, because, you know, this is what they do this is like all the news. Where was I reading? I was reading one of these papers or like internet sites that basically was talking about how there's kind of like a weird tension between Camilla and Anne based on the APB situation, and that they're still friends, and that that's her ex, and that they're godparent, like, you know, people are godparents to each other's children, and it's just weird. So I don't know if they're going to go that deep. They probably won't because it's too current, but I do think like the tension, if they want to keep Anne in the story, besides like the fallout of her marriage, that's a place where the tension can come up.
Yeah, I mean, I do think they didn't give Anne anything to do in season four.
Yeah.
She was so spectacular in season three.
Mm-hmm.
And just like, has some iconic moments. Like, just it, going back to that same conversation where they call her in and ask her to spill the tea. At the end of that, she's just like, was I too emotional for you? Because they were so worried that she was like gonna exaggerate or get off topic, and she just gave mm-hmm. them a straight telling. I was with Andrew, he was with Camilla. Andrew and Camilla are back together now. I hope they give her something to do. I'm optimistic. The casting looks really good for season five. I do think it would be interesting to see Camilla and Anne interact, even just to kind of put like a pin in how they feel about each other. But it does seem in season four that Anne is mostly sympathetic to her brother and Camilla.
Yeah. Yeah. So we shall see. Man, it's coming up. We got a little ways, but it will be dropping season five in November of this year. So according to the internets. So anyway, that'll do it for us, and we hope you enjoyed our coverage of The Crown. And hit us up, let us know what you think on all the socials. Kinfolklore Pod at Instagram, Kinfolklore Pod on Twitter. Leave some reviews on the actual wherever you listen to podcasts, and thanks for listening.
Bye, everyone.